Hey folks, my name is Spencer. That's Yu.
Hello.
Do you know us? I don't think you do. It's been a minute. And if you do, you're probably an old fart to the channel.
Or old, or a senior, or like in college already, because that's how long it's been.
Yeah, it's been like a hot minute. What a way to introduce this. This is a 10 out of 10 intro, Yu. We're going with it. Hey. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. It's the Half Hour Podcast. And it's the first time that we're really recording, and we're being serious about it this time. We're back. And today we're going to talk about natural disasters. What a bad segue. And
I feel like before we continue, we should probably introduce ourselves, because I'm anticipating we have a lot of new listeners that actually don't know who we are and have never competed against us in the Wyoming circuit.
In the Wyoming circuit or elsewhere, because like it's been a minute, right? And we're really a target for the speech and debate audience, so It will take a few extra minutes in this episode. We'll introduce ourselves and we'll talk about how this podcast works, etc. So I'll gladly start with Yu, because Yu is usually the first name listed.
Of course. I am Yu. I competed on the Wyoming circuit for 4 years, and I did extemporaneous speaking for 4 years of my speech and debate career, along with other events as well. I have had some success, I'd say, like both nationally and also on my personal circuit in Wyoming. So I feel like I have some tips and tricks for you in terms of how to construct your speech and also learning more content in order to strengthen your ability and confidence in your extemporaneous speaking skills.
I'm Spencer Travis. I also competed for 4 years in the Wyoming circuit originally from Green River High School. I did extemporaneous speaking mostly and national qualifier in the event, 2-time state finalist. So pretty cool. And that's kind of where our target audience is for. Since then, and it's been a break since we've really done the podcasts, I have graduated from college. I hold a degree in political science. And I work for the state of Wyoming's government within the Department of Transportation. So I'm pretty heavily involved with politics. Even though my job really isn't the most politically based, it does revolve around some things that have to be political. So I understand a lot more of the statewide interaction of government here in the state of Wyoming. But you also have to understand the federal government and international government's impacts on other things that we do. So, with that being said, let's explain a little bit about how this podcast works. And it's pretty exciting if you are brand new to this. Man, it's been a minute since I've done a podcast. So, like, I'm aware that I do not sound as enthusiastic as I usually do. Because I remember when we did these podcasts, we were through the roof sometimes. And my sarcasm was blatantly amazing. So, here's how this
really changes you.
Like, when you start working 40 hours a week, to all the people who are listening, life becomes a lot harder, and you start getting worn out really quickly. So enjoy your time while it, before you become an adult, okay? That's our piece of life advice today. I hope you all appreciate it. Spencer advice is usually the best advice. There's no questions about it. Anyway, how this podcast works, before we continue tangenting, because I am known to do this on this show. Normally, with every episode, we start with some kind of introduction into the topic. We discuss what's going on, why the topic is being brought up, and we introduce the topic a little bit. We are changing a couple things this specific season, and that's going to be a lot better, because the goal of this is to get this done in the amount of time that you have for prep. Hey, hence the half hour. This is targeted for the extemporaneous speaking audience. You have only 30 minutes to prepare a 5 to 7 minute speech. Our goal is to give you information in about 30 minutes. In the past, we have sucked at that. We are changing that this time around. Hey, Yu and I will provide a background segment at the beginning. It'll be about 5 to 7 minutes long per person, hopefully less. I think in the episodes that we have coming up, it's much less than what it used to be. We used to go really in depth with background. Now we're going to give you the main points and be a lot more specific and focus on what needs to be said and why things are happening the way they are. So everything's going to be short and sweet. It's still typically the same that you're used to, though. I provide a lot more of the background. UU provides a lot more of the in-depth, like, analysis of what's really happening and more of, like, the look into this. I sometimes go into theory. If you're not familiar with political science theory, sometimes it can be very complicated. I'm going to really try to hold back on that this season, because I understand that the circuit is changing and those political concepts are not always understood fully, and they do take some time to explain. After that, we take a question from Extemp Central, typically. If not, we'll come up with a question on our own. Extemp Central is a great resource to find Extemp questions to practice. So for any coaches that are interested in challenging your team and finding questions that are likely to be picked, this is great advice for you as you coaches. Extemp Central is a phenomenal resource. They provide questions every week. Every Monday, you'll have 10 questions, both U.S. and international. We select questions right from that list. That's how we create the topics that are on this channel. So
we are not sponsored.
We are not sponsored. This is just a great resource. And I'm pretty sure Extemp Central is like more of a nonprofit too, so they don't like do anything, or they don't even like. Yeah, we are partnered with Lyle Wiley here on OneClap. Lyle Wiley is a cool dude, so go and give him all the support. Thank you so much, Lyle, for everything and uploading our content, pushing us a lot more. It's been a minute. So we thank you all so much if you continue supporting this. We are on YouTube. We have our own channel. It's The Half Hour. Go and look us up. Subscribe to us. You get stuff earlier. Yu will give that whole spiel later. Yu's got a thing that she does at the end of every video. But once we conclude everything, you should be more knowledgeable about the topic and you'll be able to hear varying opinions and kind of thought processes by people who were former extemporaneous speakers, and you get that opportunity to learn much more about topics that are happening. Yu, is there anything I'm missing?
I will sometimes eat in the videos, so if you're on our YouTube, you can watch me eat if that interests you. But other than that, I think we're good to go. Covered all your bases.
I usually drink Mountain Dew, so we drink and record.
Yeah. Yeah. We're really chill.
I promise I won't be drinking alcohol, even though I'm over age now. So,
me too. But I also promise.
It would be irresponsible of us to be drinking on this, unless if we have an episode about alcohol limits. But, like, that's besides the point.
Like, censor and bleep this whole part out. PG. It's PG.
It's PG. We promise.
All right. So you want to kick us off?
Sure. And like I said, we usually start with an introduction of the topic. So before we even go into our background segments, let's introduce the topic. Why are we here? Right? Like, that's the simple question, Yu. We've been talking about this topic for, it's been a while since we've talked about this topic actually in particular. But this year has made it a lot more clear that we need to talk about natural disasters, and it is just unbelievable. Like, just where I live in Cheyenne, you and I have had conversations. This is abnormal weather, and it has been incredibly hot this year. Or where I live, it's been full of rain, which is not normal for typical Cheyenne. So, But we're talking about a lot more of these natural disasters and what seems to be the true effects of climate change really happening.
Yeah, it is very sad to kind of watch and feel helpless as we are like going into disarray. Like if you keep up with the news frequently, or even if you're on TikTok, there's videos all the time of flooding happening, people losing their homes, people losing power. There was like a wildfire that happened this summer in Hawaii, and you know, the people there, the community there is suffering very, very greatly still from all the damages that the fire has done. And I think it is good to say that like this is man-made, and all these disasters that are happening connects to us and how we have been as people and corporations, you know, going about our everyday lives and doing things that are very destructive to our environment, causing a lot of this to happen.
I mean, the facts are just straight out there. This is it. Climate change, the way that we're seeing it now for the first time in the world's history, is in fact man-made. It's something totally different than what it has been in the past. And the climate science has stated in the past, like, climate change is a natural response to Earth. It's the way it's happened in Earth's past. There's been several instances of climate change before, but in the past, it hasn't been caused by humans, right? It's just been caused by natural things that happen with the Earth. For the first time in the Earth's history, this is in fact man-made. And what we're seeing is not anything that has been seen before when it comes to climate change. So that's the discussion that's been happening. We're not going to go too much into the climate science. It's very, very complicated. All you really need to know is this is man-made, and it is perpetuated by the fact of continuing growth with fossil fuels. That's the short and sweet of it. And it has been a controversial topic, despite many scientists siding with the fact that climate change is in fact real. I believe it's like 99% of scientists say that this is a real thing. So put the facts out there. This is a real problem, and we see this especially this year. Any last things, Yu, before we jump in?
I don't think I have anything else to add, but do want to emphasize that this is very much a real problem, and probably one of the biggest problems that we, as the next generation, you know, taking control of power, have to face.
Exactly. Also, just to note, we forgot to mention this earlier. Each month we'll go, this is a new change, we'll do two international and two United States topics. This will be the international topic of the month, of this month, because we're only going to have three episodes in October. So this is a real international topic, and it's not just the United States, it's several other countries, and we'll be taking this and looking at this from an international perspective today. All right, without further ado, let's jump in. We'll start with your little background information. So there's an organization called the NOAA. They are the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. This is a pretty big organization to look at. They are one of the best organizations to see anything pertaining to climate change and seeing kind of what's happening with the Earth. The NOAA has stated that this year is the worst year recorded for natural disasters. We'll look at the United States here, and the United States that are over $1 billion since record keeping has begun. When I read this article, and things have changed here. There have been 23 natural disasters that are over $1 billion. 18 have been severe weather events. 2 have been flooding events. There's been one tropical cyclone. This is Hurricane Idalia. One wildfire event, this would be what happened in Hawaii, and one winter storm event. One of the biggest natural disasters in the United States were the wildfires in Hawaii, which killed 115 people. And to this day, there are still dozens that are missing. We haven't really heard a lot of reports about updates pertaining to the wildfires in Hawaii since this whole thing had happened. So maybe go and try to dig a little deeper into the wildfires that happened in Hawaii. This was a very serious issue. These wildfires were exacerbated by Hurricane Dora by its strong winds. This wildfire led to the deadliest wildfire that happened in the United States in over a century. Now, Hurricane Dora did not make impact on Hawaii, just for your information, but it was essentially close enough to where strong winds pushed the fires so fast that it encompassed a couple of towns and just absolutely destroyed natural cultural heritage and led to one of the deadliest wildfires we've ever seen in this country's history. And if I'm being totally honest, this was shocking to see that this happened in Hawaii, out of all places. I don't think that's what we would normally expect of a place to have a wildfire. In the United States, the cost and frequency of natural disaster events have increased in recent years. Increased losses from catastrophic events increase 5-7% per year and are continuing to rise at a long-term rate. So insured losses are essentially like how much money you are losing from a catastrophic event. So think of that as like a hurricane comes and takes out your home, for example. The catastrophe that has been the biggest threat to insurers in 2023 this year, thunderstorms. And that's because thunderstorms have been much stronger than in the past. And you can see this based off of various flooding events. If you live in the state of Wyoming, this has been one of the wettest years of all time. So one of the biggest threat to insurers is and has in fact been thunderstorms, and they have been leading to more severe events such as more tornadoes. Adding some food for thought here. Obviously, I just said this part of the reason as to why natural disasters have become more costly towards insurers is likely due to population growth. I forgot what I wrote. That's cool. But it's due to population growth in hazardous and low-lying areas. And to this day, this is seen as more significant. So this is like your populations that are like right near sea level, for example, where you're going to have more hurricanes or you're going to have, you're going to have more hurricanes or droughts that are going to lead to greater wildfires. So to this day, this is seen as more significant, and you will probably see more costly disasters towards insurers over time. Since 1980, the United States has experienced 371 climate events that exceeded $1 billion or more of damage, according to the NOAA. This means, remembering that we had 23 natural disasters that are over $1 billion this year, this means that 6.2% of these natural disasters occurred this year, and this is expected to grow. So it is likely that that percentage will be higher next year or higher in 2025. Across these events, the total cost of damage exceeds $2.6 trillion. Rachel Cletus of the Union of Concerned Scientists has spoken out about the record-breaking numbers in terms of natural disasters, saying, quote, "These record-breaking numbers during a year that is on track to be one of the hottest ever are sobering and the latest confirmation of a worsening trend in costly disasters." On top of that, Cletus adds, "This year is far from over, with the busiest part of the hurricane season just getting underway, making it likely that these numbers will climb further." And that's what we mean when we're talking about this is potentially going to be worse than what we're making it out to be now. Hurricane season is not over. I don't think it usually ends until the end of this month, UU. So this is a serious, serious thing. And on top of that, we're talking about winter weather events that have been nastier than usual. So this year is not over with some of the biggest natural disasters. And we could definitely be seeing something particularly scary.
Definitely. And I think with just everything we're seeing now in media, it's already very scary. And we are certainly in a state of panic, or at least like most groups and climate activist groups that are involved with these issues are very much in a state of panic. And that's why you do see increasing acts that are a lot more, I'd say like a lot more out there and surprising, and just bolder moves on climate activist parts, because they're in such a state of panic about what we should do in order to combat the climate crisis. And I think like this is just a good place to emphasize again these recent events that have been happening, and this like continual climb in the worsening climate disaster and also global rising temperatures is man-made and has been due to both like corporate influences, but also governmental decisions to approve certain projects and to allow it to really get out of hand. And we even see it within Hawaii itself. Right? No one expected it to happen, but that's only because we haven't really been there to see the history of how all that happened, with the effects of like wanting to clear out land in order for agriculture to take place and stimulate that type of production, leading to barren land that was able to catch fire and spread that fire really, really quickly. And is not the only place that's experiencing this, right? Like everywhere is sort of experiencing this. So it does lead to the question of like, what are bigger nations going to do about it, is since they have such high stakes in causing the destruction, right? And so the United Nations Climate Ambition Summit that was held in New York on the 20th of September, so about a couple of weeks ago from now, it's also called CAS, C-A-S, if you wanted to know. But prior to the meeting, there were lots of protests happening in New York leading up to the conference, specifically anti-fossil fuel protests in response to Biden and other global leaders continuing approval of oil drilling projects like the Willow Project. This is a lead up to the Conference of Parties, or the 28th Conference of Parties. You might know it as COP28. It's more the familiar name, happening in November. What was discussed in the CAS held in New York, though, was the usual: countries need to start phasing out of using oil and coal. We have to have strategic plans and to follow a tight timeline. And we definitely have to keep global temperatures under 1.5 degrees Celsius, et cetera. All of these promises were promises that countries had signed onto during the Paris Agreement that happened in 2015. So this isn't new. The discussion and also points that these countries are bringing up is definitely not new things that they have to do, or like new procedures that they're going to adopt. It's usually the same, more so just shifting sort of the responsibility, managing their timelines, and even like shifting back timelines in order to meet the goals that they set out to meet for the Paris Agreement that they had in 2015. Or that they agreed on in 2015. However, this year, though, there has been a major push for renewables and gaining funding to subsidize this huge shift to renewable energy rather than using fossil fuels and other non-renewable energy sources. The Nation reports that who's going to preside over COP28 would be Sultan Al-Jaber, which is the chief executive of the country's national oil company, Abu Dhabi National Oil Company, or ADNOC. And that decision definitely outraged climate activists, because it doesn't make sense that you would have someone, you know, that is a leader and chief executive of the country's national oil company to be the one presiding over COP28 and really leading the discussion on shifting to renewables and decreasing global temperatures. So that is all to say that even in this event, where he knows that he's going to be the one presiding over the summit, he is set to increase his company's oil production at the same time. So there is this sort of tension between activists, between other countries, and Al-Jaber, in terms of what is going to really happen at COP28 and how it's all going to play out and what goals are going to be set forth. For specific reasons, I want to focus on the EU and kind of their processes in handling the climate crisis. I know previous episodes we have already focused on the United States, so if you are interested in learning more about United States climate policy, I would go back and find that episode. I think it was specifically on California and Colorado, somewhere in our archive. But for now, let's focus on the EU, since our little question as a preview is also going to be focusing on the EU. So the EU, or the European Union, is basically just a coalition of countries working together, mainly concentrated in Europe. The plan that the EU had formed, which is called RePowerEU, formed when the Russia-Ukrainian war started, and the EU really had to figure out, or the EU countries really had to figure out where to get their oil and energy supply from besides Russia, since they didn't want to support Russia and their funds for the war against Ukraine. So as a result, the EU came up with a plan that they would need to have 69% of shared renewables and electricity by 2030 to meet its goals outlined in the RePowerEU plan. The International Energy Agency, or the IEA, estimated that the EU can get to 55% share of renewables by 2027 and suggests that further action could be taken to meet these goals, like overcoming deployment challenges in the electricity sector and also transporting and heating and cooling sectors as well. Other initiatives include the EU Green Deal and other bills EU lawmakers are trying to pass to meet 2030 targets and their pledge to the Paris Agreement. A couple of weeks ago, they had passed an initiative that accelerated the deployment of solar panels and windmills, and they expect that the deployment of renewables in the transport sector should help reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 14.5% by 2030. Not all countries, a part of the EU, agree on production and stipulation of how to get there. Some of the greatly contested methods are hydrogen and nuclear energy sources. But this initiative is still in the process of gaining approval from other member countries, meaning that there isn't even a lot of agreement on what it is that each country has to do in order to meet these goals. There are also initiatives working on conservation efforts to curb deforestation, but those also gained a lot of backlash and had multiple lobbying efforts to curb the passage of that law. But the initiative literally just barely passed back in July. If this doesn't give you like a sense of how EU politics really works out and how like they're dealing with the energy crisis as a collective, then I don't know what does. There is a lot of disagreements. These are like independent nations trying to come up with an agreement after all, much like COP26 and what happened with the Paris Agreement. So there's obviously going to be a lot of pushback on all sides of what the solution would be and what they're going to end up doing. Initiatives had already been criticized as other claims that the EU lacks the ambition to carry out its plans and argued that these plans will ultimately fail for the EU to meet their outlined goals. And mainly they're criticized for setting yearly targets of renewable energy usages too low, even lower than the UAE's standards, which has been deemed like already as a petro state, which low-key kind of embarrassing if you can't even match the targets of a country that is considered like a petro state in terms of its oil usage and like renewable energy usage as well. So overall, it's kind of a mess, like it's always has been. I don't feel like countries agree, even remotely, on how to shift away from these really not reliable sources and shift to renewable energy to decrease carbon emissions. So yeah, Spencer, it's a mess out there.
It's a complete mess. And I mean, let's just be totally fair. I just don't think anybody knows where we're how to do this. And the other question is do we have that technology yet? Because some of the cleanest sources of energy out there that can help us meet these targets haven't even been fully designed yet. And we're talking about things like blue and green hydrogen, which obviously go and read more about that. They're very clean sources of energy, but the technology is just not there yet. And so the question I think really comes around to like, we can rely on wind and solar for now, but when it comes to the full energy transition of wanting to go to renewables, the technology is just not there yet. And that could be sparking some of the disagreements that exist.
I think it is a perfect segue, though, into a question for the episode of, are the European Union's renewable energy targets too ambitious? And Spencer, since you're already starting to talk about the technology of renewables, let's just start with you in answering this question.
Sure. Answer is yes. I mean, there's just really not a better answer to this question. I wanted to pull up this article because we were talking about this before the Zoom that we're doing here. So the European lawmakers approved a deal to raise renewable energy target to 42.5% of total consumption by 2030. By the way, all sources are in the description. This comes from PBS, this is a pretty reliable source. 470 lawmakers voted in favor, 120 against, and 40 abstained. So actually pretty large majority here. Foresees an updated renewable energy target of 42.5% of total consumption by 2030, with the aim of reaching 45%. The current goal is 32%. So let's just use this as the baseline. Renewable energy goals by 2030 is 42.5% by 2030. It could be a reasonable goal, but the conversation that we were having earlier, Yu, is that this is the EU that's forcing it. It's not an individual country that's forcing it. And what you have the problem with here is international organizations have very little power over the countries that are a part of the organizations. Think of the United Nations, for example. The United Nations has a number of countries as a part of it, and a number of countries that have signed on to deals and on to resolutions to do specific things in the world. But the United Nations has no power over that. And you see instances like that with Russia and Ukraine, for example, where the UN has specific crimes that can be committed pertaining to war, right? And they are very against what's happening with Russia and Ukraine, but they don't have any power to deal with it, right? The same thing exists with the EU here. The renewable energy targets are just not good enough. Or it's not that they're not good enough. It's just the EU has no control over those member countries. Hey, you might have 470 lawmakers voting in favor of this, but those countries that voted in favor, how many of them will actually go about that is the true question. And how many of those countries in particular, I don't see a breakdown on that article in particular, were voting against this because they already burn a lot of fossil fuels and it would hurt their economy. So it kind of goes, it's putting governments of different countries into states that they don't really know how to deal with this. And they might have different independent thoughts, which really is too much and isn't an accurate way to tackle the problem. So the answer to this is very much a clear yes. And on top of that, we were just talking about this. Well, I'll add a little bit real quick. Technology is not there yet. We haven't advanced enough into some of the cleaner forms of energy that exist, and the energy transition into renewable energies. Energy transition, by the way, for people who don't know, is basically a shift in how and what type of energy we use. We've had several energy transitions in human history. This would be the transition from fossil fuels into renewables. And there is, in fact, an energy transition that is happening. Let's point that fact out there. The problem is that we just haven't met that point. And that technology is still in development, even though because of the events that have happened, that we're pushing harder and faster to get these. It's just not reasonable that this is going to happen anytime soon. Technology is too advanced for us at the moment. So yes, these renewable energy targets are just way too much at the moment. And it's probably likely that it won't happen, especially considering that it's only 7 years out.
Yeah, and I think, like, to add on to that, even if the technology did exist, the distribution and usage of that technology would not be even across EU countries, especially with the ties that certain EU countries have to oil and the necessity of oil to, like, sustain their economies and to sustain funneling revenue into their own countries in order to do a bunch of other things that they had promised their citizens. I think, like, we usually tend to think of the EU as just a cluster and that every country just ultimately agrees and, you know, they don't have any differences, but that isn't entirely true. With anything that's been brought up to the EU, things are contested all the time. That's why you had, like, a Brexit happen, right, where the UK left. So understanding that there are these differences between these countries and that certain countries a part of the EU are more set on conservation efforts and renewable energy targets than other countries really paints a bigger picture for you to really evaluate and kind of do some personal research of your own about how those tensions play out between individual EU countries and what that means for global targets as well. I think if you were to take this question into a different interpretation or, like, a different route, since I think Spencer explained very clearly what the answer to the yes would be, you could say yes, but you could instead say that, like, they need to be ambitious and bring up the urgency of the climate crisis, which is a good, I would say, like, a good deference tactic of if you didn't really know a lot about EU policy or, like, EU energy structures and you had no idea what Repower EU was, right? If that is the case, I think going the route of saying, yes, they are ambitious, but what they really need to focus on is ambitious targets and meeting those ambitious targets because of the severity of the climate crisis right now, I would say as a judge, listening to that speech would be a valid answer as well, as long as you're putting it in the context of Europe, right? And you could expand it to the global, but with a focus on Europe, since the question is, like, about the European Union, so you should probably focus about the European Union and crises that have happened there relating to the climate crisis. And I think that is a valid answer. Maybe that's just, like, me. If anything, I think another way or another route that you could go about answering this question is that, like, saying they're not too ambitious, since certain EU countries have set goals that are below their targets already in order so that they could, like, say they have met their targets. But it depends on what you're really talking about when we talk about European Union's renewable energy targets. Like, are you talking about their recent plan with Repower EU? Are you talking about individual EU countries' plan and targets? Are you talking about their agreements that they made in the Paris Agreement, right? And depending on what angle and what definition you're going to bring to the judge about what you mean by EU renewable energy targets, that's going to change the certain direction that you take with your question. So I would say stick to the easiest option. And if the easiest option just ends up being you have to defer and just say, like, they're ambitious, but they need to be because climate change is a really big issue right now, that's totally fine. I don't know. What are your thoughts about that, Spencer?
You know, I actually think that's a fair answer here. And it's because you're right. What's the actor here? When you mentioned that, actually the first thing that came into my mind is what are corporations going to do here? This is part of what I was chatting about with the energy transition just a second ago. The energy transition is going to be influenced by corporations. That's just the end of story. Economy, environment, energy, environment, economics all tie together in one way, shape, or form. They move with the same kind of flow. So, like, the economy is going to drive, because people are interested, people want to see the change into renewable energy. So there's a major demand in the economy to push towards renewables. So corporations are moving towards renewable energies. This is a fact. We are seeing this now. We're seeing a growth in renewable energies versus previous years. It doesn't matter if it was in the United States, if it was a Democrat or Republican, they're going to push for renewable energies because the economy is demanding it. And that kind of brings a little bit into your point of, like, there's really not an actor here. This is a renewable target's goal. Hey, so you could answer this by deferring, but then bringing up different actors with your answer. So you could talk about what are independent countries going to do, like what you had talked about. You could also talk about corporations. What are the corporations' plans? Where are they going to go? What's the end all be all with them? And you could talk about citizens. Honestly, citizens do contribute. That could mean, like, if you think about taking a flight will always tell you, based off of laws of certain nations, how much your carbon footprint's going to be to go somewhere. So it could be about citizens taking the most economically or environmentally friendly flights, right? So, like, you could go a lot of different ways with this kind of topic. And the easiest answer, you is definitely just straight up yes. This is way too ambitious. But if you want to be creative, give yourself a little bit of bonus points. I like the deferred answer too. Normally, I'm not a big fan of that, and Yu knows that, and we've showed that on the podcast before, that I don't like that kind of answer. But here, since there's no actor, I think if you're giving an extemp speech, you have to be clear that there's no actor. And you have to say that there's no actor based off of this question, and then tell me different actors as your response. So I think a little bit more clarity actually brings this answer of good value. But yeah, I agree with you here, Yu. I think it's perfect to defer as long as you clarify that there's no actor.
Yeah, I mean, even if you identify the EU as like the main actor, right? I just think having that type of answer just gives you a lot more variety in the points that you could make. Because if you just said like clear cut yes, I only think of just being able to make one point, right? And you could make different multiple points about like different EU countries and how they deal with the climate crisis, right? Being supporting that answer of yes. But I just think that if you say like, yes, but here's the reason why they need to be ambitious, that gives you a lot more access to a lot of different points that you could bring up, right? Like you could bring up the fact that the climate disasters are ripping up towns and affecting the most poor, right? You could also bring up the fact that like they have international standing, and if they don't meet their targets, then they're going to look really bad on the international community. And you can like bring up just a whole host of points as to why this is, right? Like referring back to extemp structure, needing two to three like points explaining your answer, really thinking about what gives you the most variety and gives you the most ability to talk about this question very comfortably is going to be really important.
And make sure that you do, when you do something like this, that you do back up that yes. Hey, because you can turn around and say, yes, they're too ambitious. But then when you say things like, but they have to be ambitious, right? And then you bring up the flooding and all that. Make sure you tie that stuff back to the fact that it is too ambitious, right? You have to make that clear with your answer. That way your judge knows the answer that you're giving and understands your point clearly. So that's a really key point here. And Yu, I think you'll back that one up there. Just make sure, like, don't go down the weeds of climate change is bad, even though you're giving a yes answer. Make sure that yes is backed up. Because if you're going to say it's too ambitious, as a judge, I need to hear that it's too ambitious and not that climate change is bad, right?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, as personal preference, I would usually put something like that in my introduction, where I start off with a little bit of background information before I go into my 3 points. That would be a really good place to put it. But you could also embed that answer within each of the points that you have as well. Because if you have different points, you could always talk about, like, first, why is this a really ambitious goal? But then go on to the urgency of, like, this is exactly why they need to be ambitious. And that's how you could tie it together.
Yeah, I agree. That's a very, very good answer. And if we're being real, you can tell Yu and I have been at a national tournament, because that is what you would probably see at a national tournament. That's a very good answer. So if you want to get creative and really develop your speech a lot more, the creative answer is definitely, like, this is for you junior, senior, varsity members, your creative answer. And honestly, your answer at that level should be yes, but they need to be ambitious. If you're kind of in that starting phase, you the novices that are the freshman or your sophomore years, take the easy yes. Because getting into that complicated, answer, it takes a little bit of time, and you want to work with your coaches before going into a speech and providing that kind of answer. Would you agree with that here, Yu?
Yeah, I think so. Just developing that sense of doing more, like this is a type of answer that would allow you to flex your knowledge. So if you don't have that knowledge and that basis, it's kind of hard to, you know, have that answer. So I would say definitely the best way to improve is to read a lot more, right? And to do a lot more research on your own into this topic, into what is very interesting to you, so that you can have that basis of knowledge and that bag to just pull things from and flex your knowledge to the judge and be like, I know so much more than this, or like, I could be such a high level thinker that I'm going to take it a step further, you know, but do it in the context that would make sense in the question and not just doing it to blurb out, like vomit words out of your mouth.
Absolutely. Well, Yu, I mean, this is a little over. We're at 46 minutes, but that's because we introduced quite a bit. This is our first episode in a bit. I do think we can wrap it up here, though. This gives you a good starting base. We always provide those sources in the description. Go through and read them. We always try to find pretty good sources. I know in particular for myself, I try to find centrist sources, so I don't look for your left or your right. I don't go CNN or Fox News. I don't go, like, I even don't really go New York Times anymore much. I go for your centrist sources. Because she goes a little bit more in depth, we'll find those, like, center right, center left most of the time. So the sources we provide are usually really good, and they're very credible sourcings. So always go through and read them, and hey, take some notes, because you never know, you might be able to use those in a speech. And if you can remember that source, it saves you a whole heck of a lot of prep time.
For sure. And well, speech and debaters, extempers, and everyone else listening to this podcast, thank you so much for listening, and thank you for tuning in again. I know it's been a while, so we do really appreciate you supporting us again, and we'll definitely blast it out on our social media channel. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, feel free to reach out to either of us. I think our Instagram handles are like linked somewhere around the video, or at least in the description.
They're right there on the video.
They're right there. But if you don't feel comfortable reaching out to us individually, you can reach out to the Half Hour Extemp podcast on Instagram and the Half Hour on Twitter if you have any questions or concerns. We will see you weekly, so tune into that. Our episodes are posted on our YouTube channel a day or even weeks or months ahead of being posted on OneClap, because Lyle's a very busy person. We really appreciate him, but of course, like, he's a really busy person coaching, chaperoning tournaments, running tournaments, etc. So if you do want to have reliable and consistent episodes, just feel free to follow us on our YouTube, subscribe, hit the bell so that you're notified. It's the Half Hour Extemp podcast. Thank you so much.
It's just the Half Hour on YouTube. Fine. just look us up. You'll know. You see the logo. We're cool. Thank you all so much for watching. And until next time. Till next week. We will see you all later.
Bye.